as an introduction, not that I feel sort of like the guy that came up to me one time after I made a talk and said, "Now, boy, that was a talk. I don't know if that's good or bad." But I know that I'm here for this convention, meeting you people and visiting the friends that I have met before in different parts of the country. I was watching back there, and there's Max Blair, and Travis Small, and my good friend Richard Robinson, and a new friend, Tom Hearn. I feel like, you know, a dignitary. Big stuff. I'm a low-bottom junkie. They're messy, you know. And this stuff they eat up. That came to me, though, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, they have a way of, when you get built up, of tearing you right down. That came to me, knowing me for a long time, and said, "Charlie, said, you've been in AA now for a long time." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You've been sober all that time." I said, "I've been living." He says, you're back at the tree. I said, "Oh, yeah, something new, God, I've always been there." He says, "You've gone back to church, man." He says, "You talk here at AA meetings." I said, "Oh, yeah." He says, "You're in amazing. You've gone all the way through to the shrine. Now you're a member of the noble." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Boy, what a funeral you're gonna have." You know, we have said it's a funny thing, you know, with me. Usually I'm sort of shy to hear from when they tell me, "My God, it's quite good to be careful what you say." There's my folks out there. But they brought me down here especially to sort of get this thing kicked off on the Christianity calendar. And frankly, I'm old. I ain't too busy as you say, I don't think. I'm just a plain, common, ordinary, garden variety drunk. So we're different, we're like creatures, you know, there's different types of creatures. Like, they hear me in the same direction, but I mean, you know, there's not like two creatures walking down the road from time to time to forth in the road, and one sees the sun going this way, and the sun going this way, and says, "You better come on, go with me, there's bears up there in the woods." Other people says, "I know there's bears up there." He says, "What you going to do when you run into them bears?" He says, "I'll pray." So I said, "All right, but I'm going down this road." So he hadn't gone over about 200 yards, and here come this other piece of just a hill and down through the woods. I mean, the hills was all tore up, and he was scratched all up, and he come up here and paint the other piece says, "What happened?" He says, "Man, bears up there." "Yeah, no." He says, "Well, didn't you place it?" "Yeah, but let me tell you something, boys. Bears fine at a fair meeting. But ain't worth a damn at a bear meeting." To look at my life in Alcoholics Anonymous as if it were a ladder, and each time that I progress in my ladder of life, all my way down to reaching this low bottom of mine, I like to think of it as having gone another rung in this ladder. Now, some folks have great long ladders, way up you know, after you spoke that intellect is bosses, you know, it follows a good order. And then as the middle class, the working class people, that have shorter legs, and that they don't have so many long. I mean, I like these fellows with these long letters. They can make a few mistakes and drop down a few rungs and see that they're hidden in the wrong direction and don't mess up their wrong. But not a fellow like me, I had a real short letter. And I set down a few rungs, I run out of letters. And then, on top of that, it was sitting in a hole. Actually, I started drinking where most folks stop. I remember the first time I ever took a drink in my life. I got drunk and passed out in the backyard where we raised chickens. Now, I don't know if you folks ever passed out in the chicken yard enough, but boy, you're a mess. And my mother came back there and signed me, and she never had seen me looking like that before. In fact, she never had seen anybody looking like that before. And she took me in the house and gave me all the therapy that she needs. A real hot bath. And it goes to castor oil and an enema. I was a king that drunk in Arkansas. Arkansas, that's where I come from originally, Arkansas. Well, there's a lot of smart states come from Arkansas. And I guess the smarter they are, the quicker they come from me. But I was down a rung on my ladder of life, and if I had had any sense at all, I would have quit drinking. I think if I was sick, And then I went down to the next rung. I guess that is the part where I got fired. And then the boss called me down into the office, and he said, "Charles, we tried everything you know. But it seems that it is of no avail, so as of today, you are to be separated from the road." That meant I was fired. And I remember that I left his office and I thought, "Oh, he'll call." And I waited 30 years. And while I was waiting for him to call, I drank up all the available cash. And then I started negotiating. I mean, that's when you go out to the coaster and you coach, you know, and the walk along. Then you go into larger negotiations, like you call up and say, "What you giving for 9 to 12 to do? And how much are you giving for coaching?" You know, and finally, long got in there, my wife left, and hit the door. Oh, I miss that dog. Some long men were still, I don't know, somehow I got back in the house, but I didn't get a key to the front door. And you know, the recess stage, they hadn't exactly given up on me, but they sort of put you back in the back room and tell you now, don't come out when you got something, you know. That's the point, long got in there, you're getting arrested, you know. First time I ever got arrested, $10, nothing. Somebody came down and got me out. Next time, pretty soon, I got arrested and I called up. I said, "Hey, Joe, they got me arrested. Did you come down and get me out?" And he says, you have to give me the $10 to give me our last time. That, you know, good. Well, hello, son. They got me locked up. So did you come down and get me out? He said, I know you locked up. I had you locked up. That came off the list too. And finally, he gets to the point where you run out of people, and nobody cares $10 where you can't help. You've got to be fine. I'm down another rung on the ladder. And then comes the time where in between times in jail, where you jail during the time, the way they put on chain gang, they just put a whole bunch of bumps up in truck and drive out to some place to escape. And they get some other broom, some other shovel, and let you off, and some of the streets. But well, there I am, I'm feeding the streets, ripping in, rising. And I'm thinking, oh, we're basing development. Nice sort of like me, going hometown. Leaping up the street, and I was right in front of the print office, where I was waiting for them to call me back to work. And, I said, now, there's somebody or somebody here that knows me and sees me in this predicament, and they'll be horrified. They'll go right down and take $10 to get me out. Well, no, one more, here comes somebody knows me. Says, hello, Sally. Not only did they not look surprised, but they had that look like I might be late putting it. How about that? Well, I'm saying from the town where I'll be found for a while. I was walking on in the truck and this and that. They found the chicken and the dog check. Oh, I love dogs. And dogs like me. I was a furious if they check the dogs, you know, like, man, they drive up and get me a little creature dog. Man, I had any dog, he didn't drag me a little tail, lick me on the cage. And I threw him in the wagon. Wasn't long. I had a whole wagon of little dogs. I could have found this patting me on the back. He's the best dog catcher we ever had. When we got out there, they handed me a bucket of paint on these round brushes after using pencils. And he said, now, sort of, get to death some of this paint that's high on the back so it can't lick it off. I said, well, what? He said, well, if they're here 10 days from now, we're going to shoot them. I said, oh, no, you want to be nice to dogs? He said, what do you think, you just collecting dogs? So he had to go to the other part of this town for something, and he got that, got a letter from him, it leaves. He said, oh, all the dogs there. And mad, he was some kind of mad, and from then on, I had to go to the county farm to do my farm. I got out to the county farm, and that's where the real place it is, and stuff like that, and cotton, and deep brown, and all this other menial labor. And we go out there on the farm, and it was in the spring of the year, and corn was just up like that high. And Captain Cook means some more pressure was out there where this corn was, and he handed it all holes, and he said, now, boys, he says, that Johnson grass is in there, so that's yours. And that corn is mine. And I want you to get your donkey grass out of my corn. Well, now, when corn is just up that high with donkey grass, they look just exactly alike. You can hardly tell the difference. Well, all in Texas, we started out hoeing, and I'm hoeing too. And we got up there, and here comes the captain. And he looked at me and said, son, you don't know much about the farming, do you? And I said, no. I said, he's been putting in offers, you know, you're out of line. And he said, well, I'm going to teach you the difference between corn and donkey grass. I thought, that's nice. Hey, this busy man is going to take time from his door to give me a lesson in horticulture. And he said, well, get out. I said, get out? He said, yeah, just lay down here on the ground on your stomach. Not again, let's just touch something, you know. And sure enough, he went over to his horse and he got that knife. Leather, got that rag. Got that horn. Had a wooden handle on it, got like that. And he unfurled that time and took his pole and turned it up on the end. And then he unfurled it on my face too. And I hollered, he hit him good time. He hit me two times that thing. But boy, I'm telling you, when I got up from there, I could tell you corn from Johnson's ass as far as I could see. I'm down another one on the ladder of life. Well, he taught me about all it was, you know, by telling me that pain in your education meant to me. He taught me how to milk cows. You know, they still fought the same time. I never knew that till I went out there. And he taught me how to commune fences and how to fix roofs and how to keep potatoes from freezing in the wintertime. And it was all these things he taught me with that same little pack. I got to cut this short because they done told me I went before he talked too long. I went from that to this phase of being at home in the bathroom, and mother, God love her, is always having somebody to come in and talk to me about my problem. By this time, I'm a sick boy. And these people would come in, they usually were men of the cloth, and I would hear the voices out in the other part of the house, and I'd hear them come to me. And then I wonder, who the hell has she done out there now? And then I would overhear say, well, it's young woman. And then the kids would come in, all cute, smiling, you know, and say, you're solid, aren't you? And I'd think, well, now she could be just. They've been out there talking about me 15 minutes. Here comes and say, you're solid. Incidentally, I didn't tell you my name. My name is Charles Leonard Linden. Yes. That in itself is ridiculous. But I mean, when I was on the barn, I had one of these aliases, John Milton Van Dyne. How about that? Ain't that weird? Just a nice John Milton Van Dyne with his high knee mask. Well, this preacher would come on in the room, you know, and I'd be sitting there, and he would look at me, and I would look at him, and he would be thinking, what am I going to say to this poor, sweating, thinking thing? And I would be thinking, too, wonder how she's got a dream. And then he would open up on me. They always used John. And I didn't know why they used John till I came in there. Hey, that's the salvation part of us. And anyway, he had me outnumbered. He had two Johns, and I just had one. He had John the Baptist and John the Evangelist, and I just had John Harlequin. And he had me outnumbered. He always won. And he would talk and press their hearts on me, and a teacher's a wonderful. I mean, they're so sincerely desirous of giving us aid and something they don't want to give us. You know? I mean, did you ever see a teacher pinning himself on the commode? Thank you. what? He would say, during the course of his talk, he'd say, now, Charlie, I'm going to pray for your soul. And he'd do anything. I'm looking at it this way, come Jesus. And that's the last thing he would say, just before he would leave, he said, now, Charlie, I want you to come and see me. And he'd both of them, so I wouldn't. I know, because I won't. You go down to the teacher's office, say, let me get this girl out in the little handy room, you go in and you announce yourself. You say, my name is Charles Mindy, I came down to see the girl. And she says, you? The time you go in to see him, and you look at him, and he looks at you, and you see there's no recognition. Don't play differently to throw his own. I said, you're asking for $2. And you don't get it. That is not often. Once in a while you get it. But I mean, it pays you. I'll tell you how you can't get a little girl out of the sushi, though. Getting money in the sushi, you got in that old congregation out there, man. And he said in the street with me, I stood right down in the front row and won't see him dead. Look right up at him, you know, pretty soon you catch his eye, you just, and then he keep on pressing, saying, you know, he ain't talking to nobody, he's that's just you and him, you can bring it back and forth, see, now you're getting this, that, you know, getting that old, come on now, you know, stuff like that, and every once in a while, if it comes to you, you're getting the amen, you know. Yeah. Right, it's interesting. You can kind of tell when they're slowing down, when the voice is in the break of pitch, you know. And you get your hand up and grab it and shake it, says, yes. You know my reputation, and you know how hard it has been for this community to try to do anything about my problem. But today, this sermon that you have given me, I believe you have helped me. If you could see your way clear, then let me have about $2. Well, he's got that plant movement right now. I mean, he grows, you know. And you know, he's got the whole congregation there. He can get out of the street and say, you can't refuse. Even if you want to give you a little more now, son, you know that ain't the right path. Hey, you know that ain't the right path. You also know you got to change churches, too. So we alcoholics have followed a certain trend and a certain pattern, and if you've gotten down to the place, through some medium or another, I'm going to skip over the wrongs in my life, the letters, but finally I reached the point where I was unemployable. And when I say unemployable, I don't mean I was just late for work. I have been fired from washing dishes in a Greek restaurant. Yeah. They have fired me from selling newspapers in Los Angeles on the White Line. In the boulevard. I mean, they have people out there who are extremely, that you know, they turn extremely everywhere you go. And they have the people out there that sell papers as in cars come up the street and hall. They run up and down at line seven. And you gotta be drunk to hold a job like that. And I was a dizzy. But you know, I didn't give up. Oh, I had better do it. I went ahead and got me a job as a senior, and even flop out. And you know I lost that job from drinking. I mean, I was unemployed. I want you to picture me going into a mission. I'm even not talking about the church, please, but I just want to bring that to your attention. Picture me on the phone now, and here I'm going into a mission, and here this lovely church person comes up to me, and they ask me, I need a haircut. Me too. I got on the lead, this is no shock. and I had discarded my underwear for obvious reasons. My shirt is on backwards because that's the cleaner side, and the skin is out in my trousers, not for ventilating purposes. And I'm down to 2 feet. And this mother, this person looked at me and said, "Brother, have you been saved?" And you know, I came on to this holy jumping catfish, if I've been saved, where in the hell are the rejects? Well, that's the shape that I was in when they brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, picture me eating that food. Not because I wanted to come. When the man asked me, he said, "Charlie, you have an alcoholic problem?" I told him, "Yes." And I was truthful, I had run out of it. Picture me sitting there at my first meeting, dressing, speaking, stacking. He was walking, and there was a man sitting right next to me, and he sat there until he suspected that I was a little bit talented. Just like that. That means you don't have to be in your life. And then that guy was the soul of the family. He offered me a cigarette, he got up, and moved over the chair and put an ashtray between us and said, "Here, they're both using this." Now, wasn't that nice? And I remember that first meeting and I came into AA. I remember you men, some of you have bathed roots. And you have smiles on your face, you're shaved, and you have shoes that didn't have holes in them. And your voices were strong and your eyes were clear. And I remember you ladies. You had your lipstick on your lips. Very important. The ladies with whom I have been consorting sometimes miss their whole face, not just the lips. And then I noticed that your hair was combed ever so nicely. And the ladies that I have recollection of, their hair didn't have a beard, hadn't been made up for days. And then your dresses hung free all the way around. And you had your cargo of satin wine. That's sort of hard to explain. Well, I remember looking at you people and wondering what the story was, but you said, "Come back. Come back." "Come back." I remember that it took all the next morning for me to see you. It's a man and woman. I didn't take a bath. You said, "He usually does it." I wasn't even. And then I remember that I came down and I came up to the top of middle step, and I remember that I said, "My God, I'm not going up here." But you had said, "Come back, come back." And I must be crazy. A whole room full of nice, clean, respectable people have invited me, a bum, to come back. No. But I went upstairs and you had invited me to come back and you welcomed me. With open arms, and I loved you for it. You didn't ask me embarrassing questions like, "Where are you working?" Oh, You didn't say what is your religious denomination. You didn't say what your financial outlook. You didn't say where you live. You know I didn't have no home. You knew you didn't ask me what church I was going to. You know if I was going to get some kind of thing, death or what book. You knew that. But you see, what I mean is that things like that. Charlie, did you hold a cup of coffee on your stomach? I held it on there, and I mean, I wasn't like one of these high-bottom drunks where everything was awful, and they already got the transportation, you know, and then there's the families and all the parts. Everything was awful, and they already got the transportation, you know, and then there's the families and all the parts. I had to watch the color TV and stuff like that, you know. Just me, I needed everything. Stock, I didn't have none. Few things, I needed them. Folks come in and bought me coffee. One fella gave me latkes. I needed that too. I sit around the club dog and I'm sipping on this coffee with my pinky extended and shaking hands and giving my right name, going to the toilet and coming back and shaking hands. Oh, I love it. And I kept coming back one day at a time, one day at a time, and just finally all of this stuff began to stir up fears in my mind. And I wanted to know about these things that you folks talked about all the time in the meetings, like the job of my understanding. Now, it's awfully hard to see a bum on the street. I saw one on the street today that my heart went out to, right here in this town. And I knew that he was seated in the image of God and had just as much right to all of this wonderful fellowship that I had, yet he was denied nothing except. But it was thoughts like this that made me want to know about this God of your understanding, because I was hungry for God of my understanding, and I wanted one so desperately. And I had turned my back on him and accused him of turning his back on me. And so I took the Lord's Prayer, and this is why I came down here today. This is why we left. It is a bronze version of the Lord's Prayer. All man who has strayed so far away from God as to be unacceptable, not only by society, but by his own creature, and to be denied entrance in his own mother's home, and to find God again through the fellowship throughout the Holy Spirit. So I took the Lord's Prayer, and I divided it. I divided it into parts. And I noticed that when you folks said the Lord's Prayer, you said it very slowly and very carefully, as if you were really praying it, not just saying it because you had to. Oh, I've been to church, and I had heard them, and they said the Lord's Prayer, but they said it so fast you couldn't catch the word. Maybe it's because they don't need it as desperately as you have to help. Maybe it's because they know it so well that they think everybody else knows it well, too. But we in AA know that we don't all know it well. We in AA know that some of us barely know it at all. And I was one of those people. And I wanted to know it, and I wanted to know how it was written, and why it was written, and what the words meant. So I divided it into eight parts. And the first part only consisted of two words, Our Father. Oh, what this meant. The first step was me. The first word in the Lord's Prayer is Our. It denoted to me that I was no longer alone. I had other people to help me share my burden. And my load was no longer left just for me to carry. And the word Father, Our Father, it meant that He is my Father, that He is my Father. This is said is true, He was. The God in heaven, He said is where He was. And where He lives. If you could bother me, I heard that God is love, God is light, God is everywhere. And it reminded me of the story of the lady who doubted. And she talked to another lady who believed. And she told her that if you believe so in God, and you believe that He's my God too, make me know it. The other lady said, "Neil, close your eyes, and you'll have God touch your head." So the lady knelt, and she closed her eyes, and she felt a hand on her head. And when she opened her eyes, she saw that this hand was the hand of the other lady who believed. And she said, "Why, that's your hand." The lady said, "Yes, it is the nearest hand to you, and God uses it. Yours is the nearest hand to me, and God uses you to bring me back into the fold." The third was, "Hallowed be thy name." I didn't know what hallowed means. I had to look it up. Revered, honored, hallowed. His name is to be respected. And I have noticed in that day that it always was spoken in a reverent manner. And I knew that this God that he had was a good God. He wasn't a great commanding ogre that was threatening brimstone and fire because he made mistakes. He made us with his choice so that we might make mistakes. He gave us his choice. "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Thy kingdom come. Well, now, if it's the kingdom, he must be the king. That means he's the boss. He gives the orders. And I had heard people say, "Give God a chance." Well, you don't have to give God a chance. He's doing all right. He's the boss. If I should need the chance to accept his will, to accept his will, all we've got to say is, "You the boss. You give the orders. I'll obey. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. Not mine. Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven." And I knew there was a heaven. Nobody can see a literal puppy. And look at the tiny little claws and the little blind thing looping around and denied it as God, nor can they look at it through your created glass. Nobody in the right mind can deny it. Give up this day, I believe this. Well, you have told me this is a 24-hour program, and a day at a time, one day at a time. You told me the first day I was sober, I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because I had stayed sober one day at a time. Just one day, 24 hours. And that dead meant more than just dead. It means a whole lot of things. It means everything that it takes to keep your body and your soul together. And all we ask is for one day. This means that we recognize God as the source of all our supply. And we don't doubt that the tomorrow, that source, and the supply will be there if we but have faith. Now forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. I don't know what that meant. It meant sin. If forgive us our sins, as we forgive those who, oh, but boy, is that ever effective. Is that, man, if you don't want to really pray, if you don't want to really be good, don't say that part of the Lord's Prayer, because He says you can be forgiven. You got to forgive those who have sinned against you. Listen to that carefully. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass. That don't mean just some of them. That means all of them. I know, and you know, that there are some people who have hurt you so desperately, it's hard to forgive them. But you must, before you can be forgiven. Forgive them all. Well, that was hard. But you can do it, everybody can do it. I mean, after a while, it becomes so simple to forgive. You know you've got to do it. Anything you know you've got to do, you can do. And lead us not into temptation. Now that is rubbish. He is not the temptation. There were some temptations I wanted to be led into. I mean, and I wondered, now why, if God is an all good God, if he's a friendless Father, well, you know, what do you want to lead me into temptation? There's going to come back to this matter of choice. And inside your breast are two powers that govern you, and every time there's a decision for you to make, these two powers go to work inside your breast and ask you to call one of these powers God or conscience, and the other power the devil or temptation. Now every time there's a decision to be made, it's up to you. And these powers that are within your breath, that how this decision comes out, whether conscience wins or temptation wins. Let me give you an old little illustration of how this applies to me once. I had been sober for a little while. I had a few nickels in my pocket. I'm walking down the street. I mean, you know, you get ill. And this enemy of ours overtakes you. Hell. You get the feeling so good, I mean, you got to do something, you know, action. Temptation and action go together a lot of times, you know. Well, I'm walking down here, just look at the store, and oh, beautifully lit up in here, my favorite thing, you know. I got so. I'm standing in front, looking in there, and oh, temptation goes to work. Said, don't it look pretty, lying man? Conscience says, yeah, didn't you look pretty, lying man? And then it's one of these ads, you know, that says it wrote. And old temptation says, just think how it would look when it wrote. So yeah, look how you look hanging on one. Now, I don't know why they put that in the history. Who the hell says it wrote, you know? But still, they put it anyway. Then old temptation goes to work and he says, oh, she says, you got money in your pocket. Nobody would know that you had a little drink. Well, you could take just a few. You got more money than you need. And old Compton says, God, there ain't enough money in the whole world if you need to drink that. And then old temptation says, yeah, but just think how you're eating that bottle up and you pour it out in the glass with the ice already sitting in there. And then pour that face over it, and you just sit there and press it down. And then old Cotton says, yes, it would sit there and press it down. Then you drink it. Think how it would look when it come up in long green strings. Lead us not into temptation. Temptation will be with you as long as you live, and no matter where you go, you'll be tempted. But you will set forth for yourself a set of moral standards to live by. And these moral standards will vary. They'll grow as you grow in your age. So don't worry if you do something or have done something that you don't approve of now. You'll grow, you'll get better, your moral standards will change. Don't try to do this thing all at once. You didn't foul up your life in a day, and you're not going to get well in a day. It's going to take a little time. What would a man of the flesh, of your particular denomination, in question? And what turns on a sensible manner? I mean, don't try to sell him a whole lot of hoop sex on. For instance, this is a three-phase disease. Don't go to your teacher with all three phases. You don't go to your psychiatrist with all three phases, nor do you go to your medical doctor with all three phases. When you go to your teacher, you go to him with a spirit. And he treats one-third of your disease and leaves the other two-thirds untouched. Remember that. And when you go to your psychiatrist, he goes to the middle end of the thing. And when you go to the other, he goes to the other third. The doctor works it like it's a common sense deal. I mean, grasp it. As if it were a snake, it's a killer, and fired whatever tool you've got. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, the eighth part. Actually, that isn't the part of the Lord's Prayer that we use. And you know the reason that we use the Lord's Prayer? Because it's interdenominational, and it doesn't step on anybody's toes. And there isn't a Christian in the whole world that don't use the Lord's Prayer. And that's why we use that in AA. But there's another little thing I want to bring up. Did you notice in the first part I said, Our Father? If you're having a hard time with a spiritual angle of this program, let's use those three words that I did for a long, long time. Because Our Father establishes a relationship between you and me and God Almighty. If it's our Father, He's your Father and mine. This means you and I are brothers. And this is what all the teachers and all the rabbis and all the priests in all the world, this is the message that they're trying to convey. The brotherhood of man and the fatherhood of God. If you're having trouble, just stick to that and keep it simple. If you have another fear in Alcoholics Anonymous, and sometimes you're not big enough to share, because when you say the Lord's Prayer, you're sharing. You say, Our Father, you're sharing with everybody in the room and everybody in the world. But sometimes, like me, I was too selfish to share. And sometimes my load got too heavy to share with you. And I needed the direct line to God to tell him my trouble. And you gave me that. When you said, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot see. Courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. I love you, people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was an old Brahmin, perhaps I'm still an old Brahmin heart. But there's love in my heart for you because you believe me, love. And I would like very much to be able to tell you exactly how I feel, but I don't have the words. I can't project my personality. But there is a way that I can tell you by telling you a little story, and it won't take but 2 minutes. It seems there was a ship sinking in the North Atlantic Ocean. And the people were scurrying all around the decks, and they were trying to find their respective life-based, and to get their family together, and they were singing pandemonium, and already some boats had been set over the side, and some were overloaded, and the captain looked down in these dark waters, and he saw one boat was overloaded, and he shouted down in his microphone, and he said, in that lifeboat number three of you men are going to have to leave that boat, or else you're all down. And God, what did you see? For 3 men to give up their lives so that the rest in that boat might live. But finally, after a long hesitation, a man stood up and said, and he said, we were a cop, and jumped over. And then after a longer hesitation, another man stood up and he too believed. And he said, we're always here in England. And he jumped over. And then finally, after a long, an American Looking up, stood up in the boat, and he said, "Remember the Alamo," and picked up a Mexican and threw him overboard. This is exactly how I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. If ever the song comes from one of these greedy deacons that you had in AA, you know, come up and whisper in my little pink ear, "Charlie, you're getting overcrowded. Don't you want some of the old lay bottom drunk off of me?" Look, I go Mexican, I ain't going nowhere.